This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is best-selling business author and extremely popular speaker, David Merriman Scott. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
And always fun to have you here. Last time you were here, we were talking about your latest ebook, Newsjacking, which, and by the way, I use the graphic from that book in a variety of my presentations now because it's just so friggin' cool.
Thank you. It is, actually. it is pretty cool. I agree with that. I think it's the most one of the most interesting things going on out there in online marketing.
Yeah, and it's going to be part of what we're talking about today. Today is kind of unique, though, because when I do a presentation on LinkedIn, I mentioned that I've been on LinkedIn now for 10 years, but I wasn't active the first three. It wasn't until I read two books in 2007 that I got off my duff and actually formulated a plan for using it. One of the books was Jason Alba's I'm on LinkedIn Now What. The other book, oddly enough, said nothing at that time about LinkedIn.
Yes.
But it moved me into the social media realm. The book was The New Rules of Marketing and PR by this guy, you may know him, David Merriman Scott.
and I remember that because I remember you pinged me right around then, and that's around the time that we first met.
Yeah, and you were on the show not much after that.
Right, and I actually, we did it physically in the studio.
Yeah, and it was it's just a blast. But now a mere 6 years later, your fourth edition's coming out. How cool was
that? Is that nutty or what? Yeah, the book has just done remarkably well, and I never would have predicted. I think if you asked our mutual publisher, Wiley, they never would have predicted it.
It's what they wait for, though.
kind of lucky to sort of hit a trend in the very beginning and have the first book out on a topic. And it's, as you said, the fourth edition. It's sold 300,000 copies in the English language, and it's in 26 other languages. So it's rocking and rolling.
And it is, and you've got some new stuff in the latest edition, and we'll touch on that as we go along. But let's do a little bit of background, because a lot of the people listening to this show probably haven't heard any of your previous shows with me.
Or, sure.
But I especially want to go back to your NewsHound days. So take it from there.
Yeah, so I've had a really interesting career that's allowed me to do what I do now. My first job was on a bond trading desk. I learned how to use information, electronic information, when I was one of the very few people who had an opportunity to do that, because the financial trading floor was one of the very few places that real-time financial information existed. And then I worked for 6 years at Knight Ridder. At the time, it was the second largest newspaper company in the United States. And I was in charge of Asia marketing based in Tokyo and Hong Kong. So I had this unique combination early in my career of understanding how real-time information works, and also this unique opportunity to be involved with the creation of real-time electronic news with Knight Ridder. And that was starting in the mid-1980s. So I was very, very lucky that when around 2000 or so, when people started to say, hey, there's this online marketing thing going on, what the heck's that all about? And by that time, I had had nearly 20 years experience with online information. So it kind of positioned me in a unique spot to be able to start these ideas around how what marketing and public relations in my mind really is that now any of us, you, me, companies, nonprofits, government agencies, doesn't matter who, can create content which serves as the way that we can market our products and services, because we deliver that information to people when they need it, when they're looking for it, and it gets shared on the social networks. And that was never possible prior to the web. It's absolutely possible now. And the new rules of marketing and PR talked about what needed to be different in a marketing department and with marketing people to be able to achieve results on the web, and how it's different from offline marketing.
Okay. Now, you promoted the first edition of the book in kind of a, leveraging Web 2.0.
I did. You know, one of the challenges of what I do, and it freaks me out, it's one of the things that really keeps me awake at night, is that I'm the guy who talks about the new rules of marketing and PR. And if I'm not marketing my own stuff using the new rules of marketing and PR, what the hell good am I, right?
Yeah.
So
proof is in the pudding.
With the first edition of the new rules of marketing and PR, which came out in mid 2007, what I did was I reached out to 163 bloggers. These were bloggers that had written about my stuff, or that I had interacted with, or who I knew personally, or whose blogs I read, but 163 bloggers, and I put all of their names in the acknowledgments of the first edition of the New Rules of Marketing and PR, and then I did a blog post where I pointed to all 163 bloggers. And what was interesting, and I sent each one of them a copy of the book, and what was interesting was that was one of the very first times that bloggers had gotten recognized in a print book, and almost all of them wrote about my book. And that's what drove the initial sales, and that's what drove the book's popularity in the very first edition forward, was I didn't do the traditional thing of only focusing on public relations, trying to reach the media. I didn't focus on spending any money on advertising. I didn't do any of that stuff. I really just focused on 163 bloggers, and it worked out great. And, of course, that was prior to Twitter. That was prior to Facebook being open for non-students. So it was one of the few times that I was able to do something like that prior to some of these social tools that we have today.
Well, it was also prior to Wiley knowing what bestseller really they had on their hands, so they weren't pushing that edition the way
they
pushed previous.
No, it was a sort of middle of the list kind of release for Wiley, and you know, they're like, "Whoa, where are all these sales coming from?" You know, they had to go back and do another printing before the book even published, because there were so many pre-publication sales that started.
Yeah, and I got mine early because of your then publicist, Mark Fortier.
Oh yeah, right.
And Mark sends me books occasionally that he thinks I like, I will like. And
there you go.
He was definitely right in that instance.
There you go. Absolutely.
But Twitter wasn't even out when you published the first edition.
No,
what else was not there that's come along since?
Well, Twitter and Facebook came along since the first edition, because Facebook was around, but it was only for students. And you had to have a .edu email address in order to be active on Facebook. So what changed very quickly in 2007 was Twitter started, and Facebook now was open to everybody. Of course, since then, there's been a whole bunch of new tools that have emerged that I've written about in subsequent editions of the book. Things like Instagram and Pinterest and Google+ and Foursquare. So there's a number of tools that are important for us as marketers that have emerged since then. Interestingly, some tools that people had been using way back in 07 have very much declined in popularity. A good example of that is MySpace. When I wrote the first edition, I had a really big section about MySpace. And at that time, MySpace had something like 60 million users. And they're down below 20 million users today. So it's really declined. At the same time, Facebook was about 20 million users in 2007, all of them students. Today, it's 1.1 billion people on the planet that have that are active users of Facebook. So how amazing is that? The other one that's declined significantly is Second Life. Second Life was really hot back in 2007. It's a virtual community, and marketers were in Second Life trying to market products and services. And
virtual products and services.
Virtual products and services. Yeah. And it's basically, I mean, it's still around, but I haven't heard anybody talk about Second Life in probably 2 years.
I asked my son if he had ever heard of it. Travis just turned 16, and what's that, Dad?
Yeah, right, exactly. So what's really, really interesting about all these four editions that I've done of this book is that the strategies remain the same. The way to reach people remains the same. What differs is the different tools that we have available to us, and as a result of the tools, the different techniques that we can deploy to reach people online.
Cool. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of those tools and some of your favorite stories from this edition and previous editions. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is David Meerman Scott. David is the author of The New Rules of Marketing and PR and some other really great books, Marketing Lessons, The Grateful Dead, Newsjacking. But the fourth edition, David, fourth edition in 6 years, man, that's congratulations.
Thank you. Absolutely. Can you believe it? I mean, it's
I can, because I have each of the editions. So let's talk about some of your favorite stories from any of these editions. Some of the success stories, how people are companies are leveraging this tool.
Sure. So a couple of stories that are brand new in the fourth edition of the book and are new to anybody who's read earlier editions. One of my favorites is a hotel example. And the reason I love this example is because in all of my, most of my presentations, I highlight how hotel websites around the world are virtually identical. You know, they all have a picture of a hotel room or the front of the property. They all have a widget for booking a room. They all have the superlative language of how wonderful their hotel is. And as such, they don't differentiate one to another. And the hotel that I wrote about is called the Lodge at Chalk Creek, and it's in the western part of Belize in Central America. And this is a hotel that's 2 hours from the coast. And the marketers there, led by Larry Waite, are creating content about the area in Belize that the hotel is located. And now that's remarkable because every other hotel spends all of their time talking about how wonderful their hotel is. They talk about the product. Yet what they do at the Lodge at Chalk Creek is talk about the animals that are near there. They talk about the birds that are near there. They talk about the Mayan ruins. They have pages and pages of content about the Mayan ruins that are nearby the Lodge at Chalk Creek in Belize. But get this, they also talk about some Mayan ruins, for example, Tikal, which isn't even in the country of Belize. It's in Guatemala. And all of this content that they create about the animals, about the wildlife, about the Mayan ruins. And they even do articles about the beach area of Belize, which is 2 hours to the east of where this hotel is located. All of this has resulted in this little tiny hotel with less than 100 rooms having the best search engine optimization of any tourism-related property in the entire country of Belize. And if you enter search terms like Belize all-inclusive vacation and honeymoon in Belize, things like that, the Lodge at Chalk Creek pops up at the top. And as a result of that, they're able to book more business and have much more occupancy than other hotels in the country. And I just love the example because it shows that even a little tiny hotel that's independent can win against the big guys that are much larger, have much more money to spend, and have an international network at their disposal, because the best content wins.
The best, and that's key, because when I first read the new rules 6-7 years ago, content was the perpetual message that kept hitting me. I had tons and tons of content, and I was very myopic in how I shared that content.
Yeah.
So give me another story.
Well, and just following up on that, you're absolutely right, because every single business and every single person has content. There's something that you can create, that you can put out there, that will serve to market you. Everybody has that. The challenge is, how can you make it valuable? And one of the things that is counterintuitive to most people is that the way you make it valuable is that you make it free. And that's a big leap, because particularly in the B2B and B2G world, what companies have done traditionally for decades is put barriers around their content. So yeah, we've done white papers, for example, but we've always had some kind of barrier to getting that white paper content. Now, in the beginning, prior to the web, that was a necessity, because how are you going to get the white paper? The only way you can get it is to give the company your postal mailing address, either through a business reply card or calling their 800 number or whatever. But then, when the web came around in 1995, B2B companies and B2G companies would still put the requirement that you have to give an email address to download a white paper on a form, and they would use that they would say that, well, we're doing this for lead generation purposes. But in a sense, what it did was it put a brake on the content, because my research shows that only 1 out of 20 people will actually fill out a form. When if you have no form and you allow it to be downloaded with no registration required at all, you're going to have a 20-fold increase in the number of people who download it, and you're going to get people who will talk about it on social networks and blog about it and tweet about it and whatnot. So that's one of those counterintuitive things that, you know, that you hit on and that other people hit on, and that's how your LinkedIn strategy has really developed. As you said, well, wait a minute, I've got all this interesting stuff, why not push it out there and brand myself as a leader in this space?
Yeah, and it also pushed me away from one form into another. I stopped my newsletter and started my blog.
There you go, right. And
the newsletter, you know, the newsletter had a pretty decent following, but I can do the same thing in the blog, and I can push it out much easier.
Well, the other thing that's interesting and different about a blog versus a newsletter is a newsletter, by definition, is a closed system. The only way that people will find it is if somebody else points it to them, or they happen to stumble across your website and then register for it. But a blog is wide open and available for the search engine. So the great thing about a blog, even though it's the exact same content that might have been in the newsletter, is the newsletter has very, very, very few new people on a month-by-month basis, whereas a blog, you can have, you know, thousands or tens of thousands even new people who come across it, because people link to it in social networks or because people find it through search.
You know, you have one thing in the book that I just blew me away, a kind of casual remark about Etch-a-Sketch led to what? So tell that story.
Yeah. So, you might. I love presidential politics, U.S. presidential politics, and it doesn't matter who I supported, and it doesn't matter who's running. I just love the sport of it. I'm already looking forward to the 2016 cycle. You know, it's just. I love it. So, I mean, I'm one of those weird geeks that'll watch all the primary debates, like all 386 of them, or however many there were. But at one point, one of Mitt Romney's advisors used the word Etch-a-Sketch when describing Mitt Romney, talking about how, hey, you know, he's going to, after the primary, he's going to just like an Etch-a-Sketch erase everything he's been saying and then reposition himself for the general election. And they mentioned this product, Etch-a-Sketch, and which is a children's toy that's used to draw things. And then, wow, all of a sudden, that people at Ohio Arts, were the makers of Etch-a-Sketch, had such an incredible opportunity on their hands to be able to talk about, whoa, you know, they're talking about us. And they actually did get out in front of it pretty well, and they did a bunch of media interviews. But that's the sort of thing that happens all the time in our online world. There'll be some casual reference of something that somebody will pick up on and then drive forward. And in that case, it was the Etch-a-Sketch. Another one from the world of presidential politics was when, again, it was Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney said, I'm going to stop the subsidies to PBS. I like Big Bird, but I don't want to subsidize PBS. And so just this mention of Big Bird, I was, whoa, it's like a gift from heaven for the people at Sesame Street Workshop who create the programs around Big Bird. And they were, again, very cleverly out in front of it. Big Bird himself actually commented on it. So it's really cool that organizations can see how these ideas, I call it newsjacking, can lead to a lot of exposure.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I want to talk a little bit about the concept of newsjacking as soon as we come back. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm with David Merriman Scott today. David's new Rules of Marketing and PR 4th edition is out. Go to your favorite bookstore online or offline. Online if you're a Web 2.0 kind of guy or girl. David, the concept of newsjacking is just absolutely cool, and I didn't know that's what it was, but I've been doing it kind of for a while anyway. But
that's the same as me, Mark. I didn't know it. I mean, I've been doing it for a while too, and all of a sudden I realized, whoa, you know, there's something going on here. Maybe we should name this thing. Maybe we should talk about it. Maybe we should do a book about it. So I'm glad I did.
I'm glad you did too. And you incorporate just enough of it in the 4th edition here. So give me the sort of the overview, but focus in on the three areas of newsjacking.
So the idea of newsjacking is that you follow what's going on in the news, and then you comment in real time, and by real time I mean right now, this second. Don't wait a few hours or a day. Comment right now, and the purpose of commenting is so that your stuff will be tied to that breaking news story. And so there's a number of different types of news to follow. You can follow the broad, general global news and of what's going on out there. A great example of newsjacking of something like that is on the Super Bowl when the power went out. Oreo cookies did a real-time tweet with an image, and the caption of the image was, "You can still dunk in the dark," with a little cookie and some milk, and it was retweeted tens of thousands of times. Well over a million people saw that, and it basically took them 4 minutes to do. So that's one type of news to follow, the broad general news around the world. Another type of news to follow would be the news in your industry or the news in your geography. And so that's a very, very, very great way to newsjack if you're in a particular industry, or if you're a B2G or B2B sort of company, then you can follow this type of news. Or if you're running a local business, you can follow the news in your local area. So a great example of newsjacking with a B2B company is a company called Eloqua, which is a marketing automation software vendor. They found out that their biggest competitor, a company called Market to Lead, was going to be acquired by Oracle. So when they found that, within 2 hours, the CEO of Eloqua created a blog post welcoming Oracle to the marketing automation software space. It had some great quotes in it. He had some stats in it. Now, the reason to do that is because when a journalist or an analyst is writing a report on this acquisition by Oracle, they're looking for background information. And in this case, Oracle didn't provide any information at all. They just had a terse three-sentence announcement about the acquisition. So all of the background information that was quoted in the articles that came out the next morning in Business Week and in PC World and Information World and a bunch of blogs, and with analyst firms like Forrester and Gartner, everybody was quoting Joe Payne, the CEO of the competitor. Then they did something, and so that's the idea of newsjacking, the instant analysis of your competitor being acquired. Then they sent a link to that blog post to every one of their potential clients that was a current client of Market to Lead, the company that was acquired. And remarkably, that's how many of those people first heard of that acquisition, because they didn't find out about it ahead of time from Oracle. And that generated, believe it or not, I love this, $1 million worth of new business by doing one blog post that took about 2 hours to do start to finish. Eloqua generated $1 million worth of new business.
And for Eloqua, that's that's not bad. For Oracle, that's probably a footnote.
Eloqua at the time was roughly a $65 million company. That's a big chunk to come in and from one blog post. So it's actually really remarkable. And I think everyone listening in on this call can do that. Anyone listening into this into the radio can do that, because you can absolutely take advantage of what's going on in the news if you're fast. It means following international news, global news, local news, your industry news, and then when there's something that happens that's really interesting, create a piece of content, whether it's a blog post or a video or a tweet or whatever it is, right away, in order to inject your ideas into that breaking news story.
And frankly, it's better for a small company, because they're able to react faster than large companies that have that cumbersome internal mechanism for approval.
That's almost always true. That's absolutely true, yeah. Is that, and that's an interesting concept, is that if you're a small company, you get all the pre-approvals ahead of time to be able to do this, because you never know when an opportunity is going to come your way. And when it does, chances are it'll be at night, it'll be on a weekend, it'll be on when the boss is on a vacation, it'll be when the management team is on an airplane. So you have to sort of get your pre-approvals ahead of time, that should an opportunity present itself, that you have permission to take advantage of it without waiting for everyone to bless it, because by the time everyone has blessed it, it's way too late.
It's old news.
Yeah,
and
that's absolutely right.
You can't newsjack old news.
No, so. And it just doesn't work. And I see it so many times that people will try to do something a day later. It just doesn't work.
Falls flat.
I mean, it's still valuable to do a blog post a day later because your followers find it, but it's not going to be something that the media is going to talk about. It's not going to be something that will put you at the center of that news story.
Right. Creates a very little gravitational pull.
Correct.
Let's talk about social networks.
Sure.
You were an early adopter for a business person for Facebook.
I joined Facebook pretty much the day that it opened up for non-students.
Okay. But you also, you know, in the new book, you finally talk about LinkedIn, and you have a fairly significant, well, you know, I've been bugging you about that for a while.
You most certainly have.
And you've got a fairly significant piece there on Google Plus, and you are not a habitual Twitterer, but you're an active Twitterer.
I probably tweet 5 or 10 times a day on average.
Yeah, but that's from my perspective, I know people would probably do it 100 times a day.
No,
and they
I'm not that active.
Okay, so talk a little bit about each.
So I use them for slightly different purposes. With Twitter's the one I kind of like the most, because it's so easy just to dip into Twitter for 5 minutes or 2 minutes, see what's going on, maybe reply to something, maybe send a tweet on something. I love to send photos and images of places I am. I very much like when somebody talks about me that I see it and I can reply and respond in some way. So I use Twitter quite a bit. Facebook I use generally as a broadcast mechanism to talk about content I've created somewhere else. So if I by the way, all of I do this with all four of those social networks you mentioned. When I do a new blog post or a new video or something, I'll mention it in all four networks. Facebook, I probably spend more time in Facebook than in LinkedIn and Google Plus together. And part of the reason is my daughter's on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's 20. She goes to university. It's the way that I sort of see what she's up to. I think she does the same thing, see what I'm up to. So I really quite like that. And I also quite like, very much like, that Facebook is one of the places where people who I've met around the world and I keep up with. What I mean by that is I've spoken in 36 different countries, and inevitably I'll meet somebody in every one of the countries that I go to speak in, and so I have Facebook friends. I mean, I haven't counted how many countries, but I bet it's close to 100 countries by now. And I'm actually, frankly, now running up against the 5,000 friend limit on Facebook, and I don't quite know what to do about that. So I've stopped accepting friend requests from all but a very small percentage of the people who ask me on Facebook, and it's kind of unfortunate that I have to do that because I don't want to go over that 5,000 friend limit. With LinkedIn...
Hold the LinkedIn thought. Let's pick that up on our final segment.
Sure.
You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is David Mehrman Scott. David's fourth edition of the New Rules of Marketing PR is out, so get it. came out from our friends at John Wiley & Son. So let's pick up on your usage of LinkedIn.
So as you know, Mark, because you were instrumental in pushing me to jump onto LinkedIn, I've only been active in LinkedIn for about a year, and I've been resisting it for a long time. But I've been using it now, and I quite like it. I love the fact that there's no limits in the number of people that that I can be connected with. That's great, because I'm running up against the limits in Facebook. I use it to connect with people I meet through my speaking business, and I meet people around the world. I use it to broadcast what I'm up to, and I find it to be a lot more valuable than I had thought it was going to be, so I'm really glad that I've joined it. Google Plus is a little bit of a different animal. I'm not sure that I would be active in Google Plus except for one very, very important aspect of Google Plus.
Who owns it?
Is who owns it. It's exactly right. It's a Google property. And what's interesting is if you have a very well done Google Plus profile, when people enter your name into the search engine, your Google Plus profile appears on the right-hand results of Google, of the Google search results. That's valuable. The other thing that's really valuable, it doesn't always happen, but it does sometimes, is if you're writing a timely blog post or you have an interesting video and then you announce your new blog post or your new video through Google Plus, which I always do, sometimes the Google search engine will then say, oh, this is more important than I thought otherwise, and they'll rank your blog post or your YouTube video or your other piece of content higher than it normally would otherwise. So Google Plus is kind of a back door to search engine optimization, which I think is really, really cool. So, do I need a fourth social network? Not really, but from the perspective of how valuable it can be for search, because Google owns it, it's definitely worth doing.
There you go. You have a fairly significant part of the new book on the power of pictures, the pictures being worth a thousand words. I've been writing and speaking on LinkedIn for a long time, and I believe that above the fold, you know, when you first open somebody's profile is where you either get their attention or lose it. And the picture is absolutely key there. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, so I had always had a little bit in the book about images, but this edition, I actually blew it out and made it into an entire chapter on images. There's a few reasons for that. Number one, Instagram has become very, very popular as a tool, and Pinterest has become very, very popular as a tool. And both of those tools have really been, since the last edition was published in about the last 2 years, where they've really taken off in their popularity. And so, therefore, there are a number of ways that people and organizations can use images as a way to market. Now, images by themselves, as you rightly point out, have been around as a way to market for decades and decades, way before the web. You know, images have always been used in marketing. But what they are used now, the way they're used now, is essentially is almost like a standalone. In other words, if you have an Instagram feed, people follow because they want to see your Instagram feed. They want to see your images. So that's pretty new. And Flickr is also true of that, and Flickr has been around a much longer time. But Instagram has really captured people's attention because it's more of a social network. Then Pinterest, as a way for people to share links, many of which have images in it, is also emerging as an interesting way to do marketing. So I think it's important for people to recognize that there's multiple ways to create content that will serve to brand you or your organization as one that's worthy of doing business. We've talked about text-based content, which is things like blogs, video-based content, and now the idea of images, which include also infographics, are really emerging as a very important way to do marketing as well. So when you think about all the different ways to create content, don't just automatically think text. Think visual, think video, think all these other different ways.
Yeah, and this isn't in the book, at least I didn't see it in the book, but in a recent blog post in April, you mentioned a government contracting company in a very prominent way.
I did. You are very eagle-eyed, my friend. I talked about Raytheon. I was invited, I live in Lexington, Massachusetts. Raytheon's headquarters is right down the street from me. And I've been connected with Corinne Kowalski, who's in charge of Raytheon's content marketing efforts. I've been connected with her on Twitter for a number of years. We've tweeted back and forth. I'd never met her in person. But then she invited me to come and meet her team. And I thought, well, that'd be pretty cool. It's right down the street. You know, Raytheon, that sounds like fun. So I went. And it's remarkable what they're doing. Now, this is a defense contractor. I mean, it's a big Fortune 100-size defense contractor.
They're significant, believe me.
They're big, and they have an incredible content marketing effort. So Corinne, who runs the group, is a former television producer. The person who does their real-time content creation, Chris, is actually a Pulitzer Prize-winning Associated Press reporter. Get that. I mean, I've been talking about how the best people to create content would be journalists. I've been talking about that for a number of years. And amazingly, companies are actually doing that now. And Raytheon, with having these two people, television producer running the group, Pulitzer Prize-winning Associated Press wire service reporter, creating text-based content. The person who does their social media formerly was the head of social media for NASA. So this group is great, creating great content. And what everyone should do when you have a chance, if you're driving in your car, don't do it right now, but wait till you're stopped, is take a look at the Raytheon website, because it looks more like CNN or the Wall Street Journal or BBC than it does a defense contractor website, the homepage I'm talking about. There's
right.
Video, there's text-based content, there's a Twitter feed. It's a real-time, constantly updating brand journalism site, and it's absolutely remarkable.
Very cool. We don't have a lot of time to talk about this, but you have a whole chapter, Chapter 11, devoted to really walk people through building their own marketing plan. You want to touch on that for a minute?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that so many people do wrong when they want to do marketing in this way is they want to spend too much time talking about themselves, talking about their products, talking about their services. And that's the biggest mistake that I see with people who try to implement the new rules of marketing and PR, is they're so used to traditional marketing that requires marketing based on products that they then apply that technique to the web. And it just doesn't work because people don't care about products. What they care about are themselves. What they care about are solving problems. And the way that you serve those needs, if you're an organization, is that you provide valuable information for people to help solve problems. And therefore, this Chapter 11, and I also have a free marketing strategy planning template that I offer, these tools get people out of their comfort zone of just talking about their own products and services, and instead focusing on what I call their buyer personas, but the people that they're trying to reach, and creating content especially for them.
Very cool. So let's go back to LinkedIn for a second. When you were developing your profile, I gave you a couple of tips.
More than a couple. You gave me a lot of great tips.
But when you're using Facebook, LinkedIn, Google, and Twitter, do you get new business? Most of your business right now is speaking gigs, right?
Yeah, my primary business is doing presentations around the world. And I generally create lots and lots and lots of free content and put it out there. Mm-hmm. I also write books, of course. We've been talking about one of my books for the last nearly an hour. But most of what I do to generate my business is create free content, blogs, videos, my Twitter and whatnot. So
Web Inc. Now.
Right, my blog. So I have not been able to pinpoint that this particular speaking engagement was booked because of this particular tweet, or this speaking gig was booked because of that particular blog post. Generally, I look at it as an ecosystem, and the ecosystem includes very small snippets of content, which include tweets, it includes updates on LinkedIn and Facebook and Google Plus. Then it's a bit longer form content in the form of blog posts, and even longer form content in the form of free books and videos. And then people might find a tweet, and then they're like, who's this guy? And then they'll go to my blog and read a blog post, and they might buy a book, and then they might hire me to speak. So what's the reason they hired me to speak? Was it the original tweet? Was it the book they read? So I look at it, in my view, as an ecosystem. And LinkedIn now is a very important part of that ecosystem. I'm not able to say that this particular speaking gig was a result of me being on LinkedIn, but I'm absolutely convinced that it's helped me.
Dave, it's always an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I am convinced that the new book is going to just go through the roof again. You've been New Rules has been on the bestseller list, Amazon and a variety of other places since it came out.
Yeah, it's actually pretty remarkable. I mean, one of the stats that just blows me away is it's been the number one PR book on Amazon since 2007, 6 years.
6 years in a row.
That's crazy.
Congratulations. Again, the book is the fourth edition. Make sure you get the fourth edition of the New Rules of Marketing and PR. The author is David Meerman Scott. Check out his blog at webincnow.com. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center. This is not my day job. If you want to find out what I do, if you need marketing advice, look me up on LinkedIn. I'm very easy to find. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.